This is WCNO Palm City, the good news station.
He created us. It's his institution. He knows what's best. He knows what husbands and wives should do and shouldn't do. He knows how we can have healthy, joyful relationships. And so what I want is I want to tell people what God says. So it's not a collection of my thoughts and opinions about marriage.
I remember
have stories in there, but
go ahead.
I mean, there's stories in there. There's from people I know from our marriage, from counseling sessions. But for the most part, I was trying to unpack what the Bible says about marriage in an understandable, relatable way for people.
Okay, now your book, Your Marriage, God's Way, by the way, I just want to mention this. We're talking with Pastor Scott LaPierre, and he is a pastor of a church out in state of Washington. He and his wife have 10 children, and he has written this book called Your Marriage, God's Way. So, you mentioned that people come in thinking that their problems are unique. It's kind of like with the suicide. People think that they're the only person that's ever had a heartbreak that is this severe. And when they find out that they're not, the most important thing that can go down is finding out you're on that iceberg. But guess what? A lot of us have been on that iceberg. And you go, oh, I didn't know anybody else had ever felt this. But I don't know what it is about humans. We think we're the only ones. Just like when there's problems in a wedding, in a marriage, and the children always think, what did I do wrong to cause mommy and daddy to break up? What's this thing we have with self? It's all about self, like the world rotates around us, and it doesn't. We all are going through a lot of the similar things, right?
Yeah, we have different personalities, but we all have the same selfishness, sinful natures. And if you think about what a marriage is the union of two selfish, sinful people. And anyone that denies that is a little proud.
That's great. Selfish. Yeah.
And so when two people get together, you're going to have a little bit of a recipe for conflict, because we do tend to, like you said, we think about ourselves. We think the world revolves around us. And so you're going to end up having quite a few problems associated with the relationship. But they're not going to be that much different from everyone else's problems.
So I want to know, I don't know any of your background or your wife's background, but I don't know if any of your parents are still alive or her parents are. But did you counsel with your own parents or about jumping into your marriage, back many years ago?
Yeah. So my dad passed away from Alzheimer's a few years ago, and my mother moved in with us. And so she lives with us in an addition. And I don't know if she plans to remarry. She's pretty content, I think, being with us. She was lonely when dad passed, which is why we invited her to move in with us. She's not lonely now. You know, she's got 10 kids around, 10 grandkids around her that are in the same house. And Katie's parents are alive, and her mother passed away, but her dad remarried, and they live in our hometown in Northern California. And when Katie and I got together, we had each become Christians kind of recently, and we were not Christians growing up. We went to high school together, but we reconnected and learned that the other one had become a Christian. And it was important to me to have Katie's father's blessing. And that's one thing that I would say to a lot of the young people that are listening to your show, that if you want to get off on the right foot, you know, you don't want to be hamstring right out of the gate. Try to start your relationship off well. If you're a young man, seek that young lady's father's blessing and treat her with purity and respect. Save yourself for your wedding and try to honor your parents. I mean, the fifth commandment, Ephesians 6, points out that it's the one commandment that has a promise with it, that if you honor your parents, then you'll live long. You know, there's 10 commandments. There's only one command that God offers a promise, or with obeying it, which is if you honor your parents, then you live long. And so I would encourage young people, as you have a relationship, to strive to honor the other person's parents. And so if there's like a young lady, I hope she would tell my son, hey, let's obey your parents. Let's do what's right. If there's a young man, I hope he would say, hey, let's honor your father. Let's honor your parents. Do what's right. And I tell my kids, try to honor, you know, other people's parents, recognize the authority in their lives. My kids are entering the teenage years. So we have a 17-year-old, and then, you know, it kind of goes down 18 months from there. So we have we have three or four teenagers, and we're getting into all this relationship stuff and what that looks like and helping them navigate through that. And, you know, I think my daughter is an attractive young lady. I'm sure some young guys are interested in her, and I hope that they come and try to seek my blessing before pursuing her.
Well, hopefully she's dating Christian young men. And, you know, they say this, I don't know, but they say that if a dad loves his daughter, you know, abundantly, she'll know she doesn't have to give herself away physically to get the attention that she desires and the love she desires, which gives her the power to say no and put it off till later, you know?
I've heard that, Red. I think that's a good point. I have heard that there are girls who feel neglected by their fathers, don't get the affection or attention from their fathers, and then seek it elsewhere. And so I do try to be pretty affectionate with my girls, hoping that they have a close enough relationship with me that they don't have to look for that from a boyfriend later on. So yeah, I definitely think that a father's relation, and I have five girls, you know, so wow. I think it is important for girls to feel loved and protected by their fathers.
And boys too, you know, just today, I was talking to a friend who's in real estate, Josh, and he's taken his son on a cross country trip this summer, his young son. And I said to him, I said, well, you know, I my father was killed in a car accident the day before my fifth birthday. I never had a father figure, but for a short time, my mother was married to this man who took me fishing one day. It's the only fathering I ever got in my entire life. One day, one morning, he took me fishing and rented a little aluminum boat. And yet here it is, I'm 70 years of age, and I'm still talking about that one day. So it's also very important to have not just quality time, but quantity time with the boys, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And you kind of talked to me earlier about trying to be deliberate, Katie and I trying to be deliberate with each other, but with 10 kids, we also have to try to be deliberate with those kids and spend time with each of them and make them feel important.
Yeah. What is the number one, what's the most important or the number one thing that seems to come to your door and say, hey, pastor, we want to meet with you. What is usually that problem? Or what are the top three problems?
I'd say that the top three problems in marriage are finances, parenting, and in-laws. Finances, parenting, and in-laws.
In-laws.
And probably, yeah, in-laws. And probably assuming they're in the picture. And it's hard, you know, if you have people that are close to their parents and then they get married and then there's a young girl that's comparing her husband with her father, or there's a young man who's comparing his wife with his mother. And there's a reason that God very wisely says that a man is supposed to leave his mother and father and be joined to his wife. You know, we talk about leaving and cleaving. And the idea is you're going to leave your parents, cling to your wife, and you're not going to be comparing your wife to your mother. And if you're a young woman, you're not going to be running back to your father every time you have a fight with your husband. And so that's how in-laws can cause a problem. Finances. It's funny, I've done financial counseling and marriage counseling, and sometimes they end up kind of being the same thing because finances end up being a problem in marriage. And so I have to, you know, I think I'm going to do marriage counseling. And then the next thing you know, we're talking about finances because you have one person that spends more, one person that saves more. You have one person who wants to plan for the future. You have one person who's very indulgent or spontaneous. And those can be recipes for conflict. You know, it's tough if you've got one person who's staying awake at night because they don't think they have enough money saved up. And then you've got the other person that spends money very liberally. And so finances can be a big problem. And then communication, not 1 Peter 3:7, it commands husbands to dwell with our wives in an understanding way, or it commands us to really learn and understand our wives and then dwell with them according to that knowledge that we've gained of them. And so that's one of the common ways. If Ephesians 5 commands husbands to love their wives, one of the common ways that wives feel loved is by being understood, or a husband listening to her. And so when 1 Peter 3:7 commands husbands to learn their wives, that allows wives to feel very important and feel valued. And so, but husbands are not always the best listeners. Husbands are not always very communicative. A husband comes home from work and he's tired and maybe he wants to turn on the television or tune out his family, or he's already dealt with so much drama. And so he doesn't want to have to do something else with his wife. But the way that wives feel valued is by a husband that's interested in her, asks her questions, gets to know her. And so communication like that can be a big deal. And then in Proverbs, speaking of communication, one of the themes that comes out to wives is the danger nagging causes. It says that if a wife nags her husband, it makes him want to dwell in the corner of a rooftop or makes him want to dwell out in the wilderness. And so when a wife nags her husband, it really pushes him away. And few things make a wife more unattractive than nagging. And so that's one of the communication issues. You know, if a wife keeps nagging her husband to do something, then it makes her, she becomes unattractive to him.
Well, so wait a second. What are the, I know the women listening to this right now are going to go, but I'm justified. I told him to, you know, I don't want this garbage bag goes here, this goes there, whatever. What if he is resisting? You know, she's the domestic queen. You know, the man takes care outside the house. She's inside the house. So what about if she gets a husband that just seems to refuse to take her leadership in the domestic quarters?
Yep, I absolutely get that, Rhett. And Katie and I deal with that too, because I used to be a school teacher and she's homeschooling. So she has ideas about the way things should go. And mm-hmm. I have ideas about the way things should go, right? So in answer to your question, I completely understand it. That makes perfect sense. And I have a few thoughts about that. Men struggle with stubbornness. We struggle with stubbornness even more when we feel like we're being nagged. And so if a wife nags her husband, she actually decreases the chances that he's going to do what she wants. So she might keep asking him to try to get him to do something, but instead, because men are stubborn, he'll dig in his heels and be less likely to take out the trash when she keeps pushing him about it.
So what can she do?
It's funny you say that, Rhett. Elizabeth Elliot is a woman who's kind of ministered to my wife over the years. And Elizabeth Elliot said that there's joy in acceptance. And so I accept things about Katie, and she would be fine with me saying this. You know, she's wonderful. She's a great wife, great mom in a lot of ways, but she's not perfect. And I definitely have my weaknesses and failures. And so Katie chooses to think about the good things about me, I believe, and she focuses on those positive things. She doesn't keep trying to change me or, you know, push me. And so what I would say is if your husband is super resistant to taking out the trash, then ask him a few times and leave him alone and get one of your kids to do it. Or
tune in again tomorrow at 3 a.m., 7 a.m. or 3 p.m. for the continuation of this interview. I'm your host, Rhett Palmer, and this is a new day.
Today's broadcast is supported by Plains Dental Arts in Vero Beach and Port St. Lucie. Thanks to Dr. Alex Plain at Plains Dental Arts for keeping New Day with Rhett Palmer on the air daily at WCNO 89.9 FM.
Hey everybody, I'm Charlie Kirk. I'm excited to invite you to the Believers Summit in West Palm Beach, Florida this July 26, 27, 28. The summit is more than an event. It is a mission to empower Christians across America to stand courageously for truth. Join us for an inspiring lineup of speakers, including Jensen Franklin, Ali Stuckey, Frank Turek, John Amanchuku, and so much more. We'll provide you with the practical knowledge and strategies to boldly live your faith with grace and conviction, deeply rooted in the gospel. Register now at tpusafaith.com/believers. I'll see you there.